You might be wondering how these values get filled in. There is no magic to model binding, but it is interesting how it works, and some things have changed since the previous version of the MVC framework. Let's mash on that.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the ASP.NET Monsters. In today's episode, James is going to take us through the magic that is model binding.
I'm going to have you guys join us right there. Perfect. We're gonna own this recording. This is going to be a one-take wonder as far as recordings go.
That's what they call us, the one-take monsters.
Okay, so model binding, what is it? Well, basically, when values are provided from an HTTP request, they find their way into our controller actions by way of injection into our parameters. So I've got a couple of examples of it here. I've got a simple parameter called int ID, and I've got a person called person. Pretty easy parameters. I'm going to show a couple of things really quickly. There's a number of ways that they can get in. So there are three primary ways. First is through route tokens. Now, Simon, you covered that in an earlier episode, so I'll link to that in the show notes so that people can have a look at routes, because we're not going to dive into routes too deeply here, but I will show how routing parameters do come into play as tokens in our request, and those tokens get extracted for us. The second thing is through the query string, and then finally through the body of the message, provided the default form encoding is used in the body. So those three things, they kind of happen in order. So let's have a look at that as this goes. I'm going to just run this application here. I've got a breakpoint set in this action, and I'm going to pop over to this tool while we wait. Simon, you might be wondering what tool this is.
I am wondering what tool that is, James. It looks like it's a pretty nifty sort of tool.
Yeah, it's called Postman. We, of course, use it every day. This is something that allows us to formulate HTTP requests and, you know, provide headers and the body and different kinds of encoding if we needed to, different kinds of content type, et cetera, et cetera. So this is, I can put in an address, have anything from my URL, my URI, I have my query string in here and provide a body to the request as well. So here I'm going to start with that.
It's a lot easier to use than curl.
Yes, it's like the UI version of curl, although I've seen some people who are pretty proficient from the console with curl. So the first thing I want to point out is the routing tokens. We've got this simple parameter type called ID, and it's of type integer. And up here inside the route, we've got an optional parameter called, or an optional a route match called ID, and that forms part of the URL. Oh, we're loading some symbols now, are we? Okay, wonderful. So in this request, you can see that this is 20. I'm going to hit send, and then this will bind, and we will get into this method in our controller. And the ID method is hit in this breakpoint, and we can see that it's populated as 20. So that's just a simple thing with that route token coming through and being provided for us. But something else is happening here as well. So I've got parameters that are provided in the query string. And so we can see Foxtrot and James. Now, these are actually in my person object, and we're going to see something different here. So we're seeing this ID 20. So that came in, and you can see that the model binding, the default model binder, is actually trying to fill in as much data as it can inside this complex object for us. And it's taken the 20 and it's put that in for me. And my request said James and Foxtrot as first name and last name. And you can see the order doesn't matter, whatever order the parameters are in, they get bound. But we can see that there's this Johnny. So what happened in that particular case is in my body, I have a form encoded parameter called first name. So these would be any form items that would appear, that you submit as part of your HTTP request. And in this case, Johnny's here. So the order that they get applied again is from the route, from the query string, and then from the body, provided that it is this form encoded form values, key value pairs that come in from the form. And that's what we see here as we see this deserialization that comes in and this is injected for us into our action. Now, I have another scenario here where I want to show a difference from what had happened in previous versions of the MVC framework. So in this case, I'm going to pop over here. I've got a different route. I'm just using that so I can omit the route token for the ID. And I just want to show here first what you might be doing from before that no longer works. And so I've got a JSON message here. I specify that my content type is application JSON. I provide a valid JSON document, and then I hit send, and I'm going to have to actually set a breakpoint, so we'll do that again. And when I hit send, first try, we go into our person and there's no values there. So one of the things that has changed from the previous version to the current version is that the default binding from any source has kind of fallen by the wayside. So I now actually need to explicitly provide this from body parameter attribute. And in doing so, it instructs the framework to inspect the content type header and find the correct formatter to deserialize that any of the payload that comes along in the body. And then it'll use that when it, in the model binding process. So now when this is up and running, just waiting for it to get started again. Here we go. Now when I hit send, just waiting for this application to come online. There we go. When I hit send, this time when I come and hit my breakpoint and we can inspect the person, it's totally going to happen. We will get there.
So while that's loading, is there a reason, do we know, that this behavior was changed?
Well, I think, I'm not sure. I know that we had previously two separate, we had the web API and we had our MVC framework, and those have been merged, and it might have something to do. I mean, it's a great question that we could actually put to someone on the team. Doing that merge, it might have created some cases where expected behavior changed. One of the things that they've provided in terms of doing this is that this gives us exclusivity over where this model binding now occurs from. So this person will no longer be able to be populated from any portion of the query string or from the route. It now explicitly has to be from the body. So it's actually going to start reading from that stream, and it's going to deserialize it using the correct content type and appropriate formatter for the content type, and we get one shot at deserializing it. As to why it changed, I'm not actually sure, unless you guys have an idea as to why they made that change from implicit to explicit. I'm not sure.
I hadn't heard anything, but maybe we'll find a guest to bring on and ask them about it.
That sounds like a good idea. So now that I've added that attribute, you can see here that indeed I have my binding has happened correctly. Okay, I'm going to switch gears for a second. We're going to pop into the browser. I've got another controller here that uses, I've got another breakpoint set up. Let me remove that one. Got another breakpoint set up here. And I'm going to try and get a list of strings. So this is a little bit more, this seems a little bit different because, of course, you know, how would we present a list of strings? Well, one such way that we could do that is through a list of checkboxes or inputs otherwise that have the same name. Now, remember that form elements are, as when they get presented in the form, when they're encoded, they come across as key value pairs. Everything that comes in, be it any of the route tokens, the query string parameters, or anything that gets deserialized from the body of the message comes in key value pairs. The model binder will take those and try and extrapolate what we mean based on the signature of our method. In this case, I'm trying to get a list of strings. So what happens for me when I see this view here that it contains these checkboxes, I can select the appropriate ones and hit save. And now while I don't have the appropriate logic to make sure that somebody who selects Yoda gets a crack on the head, we will see in our listing controller here when we hit the breakpoint. We will eventually hit the breakpoint.
A crack on the head, I see what you did there. Clever.
We are just waiting. Things tend to slow down when we're recording. It's just a kind of a circumstance. I should be on a tower instead of this laptop. But so we're just waiting for this request to come in. I'll stop talking. We'll make this an edit point.
Well, we could talk about that ridiculous laptop that has 5 expansion bays and a 21-inch touch monitor. That's what you should get yourself.
Where do the expansion bays sit on such a laptop?
Everywhere.
That thing's big for a tower. I think it would be easier to just put a tower under your arm and carry it around with that laptop.
I am going to restart this because something is going on. Let's try. Okay. So when I click these form elements and hit save, we will hit our breakpoint. Wonderful. There we go. And we will see here that our list of transformers actually contain Megatron and Optimus Prime. Again, any of those, this could be, in this case, it's a series of text boxes, but if you wanted it to be, a series of check boxes, but if you wanted to, for example, have a series, maybe you were allowing your user to add text boxes using client-side script, and they could add as many as they wanted to. If they all carry the same name, they type values in. I think one example that I used before was, if you have a suitcase and you want to type all of the things that you want to add to the suitcase, each one of those text boxes could be suitcase contents, and the value would be whatever they type in. All of those would come bound as a list of strings into our controller. So that's how that gets bound for us. Now, I want to take a look at something a little bit more complicated, so I'm going to go back in. I'm going to edit my view. I'll just send this guy on hiatus, and we will re-enable this section of the form. Save that guy out, and we will go back to edit 21. Okay. So in this case, I've got the ability to create people. So going back to my controller really quickly, the signature is a little bit different. I've got a list of person. So we're actually now talking about binding a complex list of types together. And the way that we do that looks something like this. So I'll fill these values in here. I've filled you guys in before, so I won't make any mistakes by using my pre-fills. Easy to do. I hit all of those in. And we can see here that some of the routing token still works, but in this particular case, that was defined up in my route up here. But in this particular case, I've also got people, and I can see each of them in here as well. So all of those names that I typed in are still available, are made available to my action, and I can do with them what I need. As I see fit. So this is a great way to bind complex types. Now let's have a look at how that actually happens, because we have to do something different in the form. Now you'll see here there's this repeated set. I've got, basically it comes down to these rows that I've got, and each one of them looks the same. So having a quick look at that, I've got a row. It's got two inputs, both are of type text. One corresponds to first name, one to last name, but I've got an array, basically like an index in here. So the notation is we put the name of the parameter, i.e. I was using on the on my controller, the name is people. And it'll actually try and do this for you intelligently. There's a couple of different approaches that it will take, but this is the easiest one, I think, that keeps it human readable and makes it, you know, very explicit in what we're doing. So this people0.firstname, people1.firstname, these will all be submitted to the controller. One of the caveats, of course, with that is if we go in and we hit save, when we get into our controller, these are all going to come back as null. So you can make some kind of edit to the collection that you're sending from your form based on the client side, or you'd have to validate and filter things out server side as you're processing that. Something to be aware of when you're doing it. Okay. I guess one more thing I could show, and this is something actually, Dave, that you were asking about beforehand as well. I'll hit save again one more time.
Yeah, just curious what that request actually looks like then when it's coming in. Is that a JSON payload, or how did that get formatted?
Exactly. So this is, in this case, because we're using an HTML form and we're just using a default form from our page, hitting the submit button, this actually gets just included in, so we can look at it in a couple of different ways. I'll open up the request and expand for me. And there's a couple of things that we can do. So we can look in the form. We've got here our seven. Oh, there's a request verification token, right? That's included for us by default in the ASP.NET forms. So we have these key value pairs again, and if we looked at the value side of it, we would see the values that we passed in. But in this case, we just see the key name. So nothing magical happens in the browser or the client side. There's nothing specific that we need to do in order to make it work for model binding. Model binding is smart enough to pick up on those array indicators that we've got in the people 0, people 1, people 2, and use those to automatically bind to our parameter for us. And there we are.
Good stuff. Thanks, James. And thanks, everyone, for joining us again here on the ASP.NET Monsters. Remember to like, comment, share, and send us an email with your comments and questions, just like these folks.
Yes. So today we are looking at ASP.NET Monsters 60. This was Projections with Entity Framework Core, and we had some trouble with this one, Simon.
We did indeed. There was a comment on this post by, I'm going to scroll down and try and pronounce his name. Sui Chen, perhaps. I apologize profusely for mispronouncing your name. But he, or she, maybe, posted just this single character here. Right. So not being native Mandarin, maybe, speakers. We threw it into Google, and we found out that it was cattle.
Yeah.
So this was a little bit odd to us.
We weren't sure quite how to take this one.
so we did an end run around Google Translate, and we went to the source. Fortunately, we have a native Chinese speaker on one of our teams that we work with. So we asked him about it. We asked Yuji Wu, and he was kind enough to tell us that the translation was accurate, but that there's another slang interpretation of this that basically means that we have horns, which
big horns.
I guess is a good thing, because it basically means that we're legit. Too legit to
too
for
legit
horns.
Too quit.
So, thank you very much for posting a comment, and we enjoyed chasing it down. So if anybody out there speaks other languages that will confuse us greatly in the comments, please feel free to comment with those.
We're learning stuff. We learned slang from China today. So, Zui Chen, or however we are to pronounce your name, I apologize if we're doing that wrong. Follow us on Twitter. Send us a direct message. We'll follow you back. We'll get your address, and we will send you one of these lovely stickers to put on your laptop or maybe a piece of public property if you're into vandalism.
These stickers are totally legit, by the way.
They are too
legit.
Wait.
Something just occurred to me.
Yes.
Our monster logos have horns. Is it possible that he's just pointing out the obvious? You guys have got horns. And it's more of a warning than anything else.
Wow. This is entirely possible. Either way, qualified for stickers. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for joining us on this episode. And we hope to see you on the next one.
Cheers.
Bye.